Hey, everybody, I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is In the Loop. All right, let's just get this stuff out of the way. The U.S. Treasury seems to have little idea what's actually being done with the billions of dollars given to the banking industry. U.S. carmakers now seem likely to get billions of their own that few people seem to think is actually going to fix anything. Terrorists around the world have now learned just how much attention you can get by running around a city with guns and grenades. And some of our politicians appear to be corrupt on a level that just boggles the mind. Even worse, they don't even seem terribly sneaky about it. You know, the last few months, our show, like just about everything you hear news-wise on public radio, has been dealing with a steady stream of depressing headlines. Now, we always try to mix it up, keep from dragging you down too much on your Friday evenings or whenever you choose to flip on the podcast. But today, in a week of news that feels like a lot more of the same, we are explicitly setting out to cheer you up. And maybe cheer ourselves up, I suppose. We went out looking for 23 minutes worth of items that we thought might brighten your day. And we asked our listeners to tell us what cheers them up when this outside world of ours seems to be going to pot. We're going to hear from a bunch of those folks as the show goes on. Let's start with some good news from the world of business, for example. You know, these are hard times for so many companies, but not all of them. McDonald's is doing great. Big sales growth last month. Hey, and I hear you can get lattes there now, if you can get your snooty self down off your high horse long enough to walk in, right? There are two companies on the Dow Industrial Average that have higher stock prices than they did 1 year ago. Mickey D's is one of them. Bet you can't guess the other one. Yep, Walmart, which also just announced that they're going to start selling iPhones. My producer Sandon thought that was really good news, though I'm not sure even Walmart can prevent Apple from selling its products at rip-off prices. And I guess none of this really feels like out-and-out cheer-you-up news. But amid all the headlines about layoffs and wage freezes and canceled holiday parties, here is a shred of good news for us worker bees. Socializing at the office makes us more productive. You heard me right. MIT professor Sandy Pentland led the research that yielded this delightful conclusion, and he's with me now from Cambridge, Mass. Sandy, good to talk with you.
Good to talk to you.
First of all, how do you go about studying and measuring something like this?
Well, what we did is we developed little name badges that have electronics inside. They don't measure the words or record anything. They just record down, oh, you know, Sandy talked to Jeff, Jeff talked to so-and-so. And it sort of keeps a log of that that then you can see at the end of the day.
So you're logging their interactions during the day. Mm-hmm. And what do you do with that mm-hmm. information?
Well, just like people look at patterns of email or they look at the organization chart, we're looking at the network of face-to-face interactions. And we all have this intuition that the face-to-face stuff is where a lot of the more delicate, important, tacit stuff happens, but no one's ever been able to really measure it before.
Well, also a lot of the more sort of useless, inane, one would think kind of pointless things happen in those conversations too.
Yeah, the fun stuff, right? Yeah, exactly.
And that's where the problem arises. I would imagine most bosses wandering by the morning coffee klatch thinking, well, first of all, thinking, you know, why doesn't anybody ever talk to me? But secondarily thinking, people, get back to work. You know, time is money. And
right.
Are they wrong? That conventional wisdom, is it wrong?
Well, in our studies, they're wrong because there's two things that happen when you're sitting around talking about stuff. One is you're building up what's called social capital. In other words, you're getting from other people a little bit of social support that gets you over the bumps. It's this sort of human sense that, you know, we're in this together. The people around me are not evil robots. They're actually people. And that helps us do a lot of things by making us more resilient, by helping us with work-life balance, with life problems. The other thing it does is it gives us a base for tacit learning. So tacit learning is the stuff that's really sort of hard to write down, and in fact, nobody ever does. It's like, oh, yeah, Mary over in accounting, she blows up every once in a while. Don't worry about it. It's just the way she is.
Office gossip, I suppose.
It's office gossip, but it's getting to know sort of the tribal lore. How do things really work? And that sort of learning is just as important as the stuff that you get in manuals or memos or things like that.
Are there better or worse kinds of conversations to have? I mean, I like to talk to people about my six-month-old son. I like to talk to other colleagues about their babies. That can't be doing the company a great deal of good, can it?
We don't know in detail about what's best and what's worst. If you never talk about work, that's probably not good. But, you know, that conversation about the baby is actually important because you're sharing with other people how is it ideal with having a young person in my family? How can I continue to work, continue to focus, while I've got this incredible new thing going on at home?
Mm-hmm.
So dealing with that work-life balance is part of what makes you productive at work.
Now, it can't be good if everybody just spends the whole workday shooting the breeze, right? There must be some limit to this.
Good point. Yes. Well, you have to do a couple of different things. Here's the sort of model behavior. You get some information, you go to the wiki, you read something, maybe you go to a little lecture, but then you spend time talking about it with other folks at work. You know, what does it mean? How are you doing? All those sorts of things. That face-to-face communication, that's where the tacit learning happens. And then you go off by yourself and you do it. And so you got to do all three.
Let's just say some bosses somewhere actually believe your research, someplace other than, you know, Google or other legendary places to work that already seem mm-hmm. to work this way, and they want to capture some of these gains in productivity. What are some of the things that you would recommend?
Well, I'll give you an example of a really simple one. We were working with a large company that has call centers, and what they did is they gave staggered coffee breaks to everybody. So everybody got a coffee break at a different time, which meant that nobody ever got a chance to talk to each other. That means that people don't get a chance for social support, and they don't get a chance to sort of learn how to deal with problem customers. You ought to give them a coffee break all at the same time, thus, at no cost, giving your employees the ability to get that social support.
And maybe just generally, you know, to the bosses of the world, kind of ease up, you know. Don't grimace so much. Let people have their conversations and quit riding them so hard.
That's right. You have to water the social fabric as well as the report writing.
For your next project, I wonder if you'd consider studying maybe the productivity gains that come from watching YouTube at your desk. Have you considered that?
Oh, yes. No, that's got to be an important one, right?
That's the first part. That's the research phase, right, before we go and talk to
people
about it.
That's the research phase, and then you need to gossip about it afterwards. That's right.
And that may very well be productive in the end.
If you find good things on YouTube, that's just as good as reading the manual.
All right. Well, I'll tell my boss that you said so.
Okay.
Sandy, thanks very much for talking with us on In the Loop.
My pleasure.
Sandy Pentland is the Toshiba Professor of Media Arts and Sciences at MIT. His recent book addresses this topic and oh so much more. It's called Honest Signals. If you'd like to have your boss listen to this interview, you can find this episode online at minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop. I am Jeff Horwich, and on that website, you will find a link that says Join the Loop Network, which is basically an email list we use to contact listeners with questions like, with all the bad news right now about the economy and everything else, what cheers you up? We picked up a number of great examples from listeners in the last few days, and here is the first one of those.
My name is Linda Lee, and I'm from Woodbury, Minnesota. My son is 21 years old. He decided to give up his car just to cut back on expenses. He lives at home, and he goes to the University of Minnesota. Is kind of a long ride on the bus from Woodbury to the U of M. So I offered to start dropping him off at school on my way to work. Once I started doing it, it really became a drag, and I was feeling kind of overwhelmed and kind of feeling like the mommy taxi should have retired by now. But when I thought about it, I realized that although I was feeling a little bit put out by driving him to school every day, he was actually doing me a favor. He's always happy and cheerful, and he's very, very funny, and he just makes me laugh every single day. In just trying to get by, it actually turns out being a good thing for our family. Now we're spending more time together and really enjoying each other's company.
That was Linda Lee with a silver lining in the tough economy. More listeners coming up as the show goes on. This is In the Loop, and this week we're doing kind of a cheer-you-up show. In the world of medicine, we found some happier news this week. For decades, malaria has stumped people trying to come up with a vaccine. But evidently, scientists think they're on the verge. A group funded by the Gates Foundation has had success with a vaccine they've been testing with children in Africa. They hope it might be ready for the public in 2 years. Malaria kills 1 million people every year, mostly in poor countries. And for those of us in rich countries, some French doctor says he's got a pill that cures alcoholism. It's actually a muscle relaxant, but apparently the good doctor noticed that it helped people kick their cocaine habits. Dr. Olivier Amiasson decided to see if it would work on his own addiction to booze, and he claims it worked like a charm. And how about this for a pick-me-up from the world of education? American students are getting better at math. Since countries were last compared in 2003, U.S. fourth and eighth graders have much better scores. Asian countries are still mopping the floor with us, but we can be glad we have at least stopped our slide toward idiocracy. Students in our home state of Minnesota here did especially well. And in the world of politics, well, what can you say, really? The Illinois governor kind of stole the show. Even his massive head of hair cannot distract from his boneheadedness trying to sell an open Senate seat, allegedly. But in truth, there's been kind of a critical mass over the past week of politicians going down, at least four by my count. On the one hand, this is depressing. But there's also something very satisfying and affirming about seeing crooked people get their comeuppance. It's Schadenfreude, taking joy in other people's downfall. It's the silver lining, and that is why I've decided to pay a little folky musical homage to these guys today on In the Loop, this episode where we are deliberately trying to cheer ourselves up. Well, let's bid farewell to Vito Facella, congressman from New York, and a ripe, fertile fella pulled over this spring, driving intoxicated, going to visit his son by some woman he dated. This whole secret family was news to his wife and the voters who gave him a pretty nice life. Now he's sentenced to jail and he lost his seat. Political Schadenfreude, don't it feel kinda neat? William Jefferson says he ain't done nothing wrong. Congressman from New Orleans, now 18 years long. He's pleaded not guilty, he's making his stand. Even though in his freezer they found 90 grand, that doesn't mean voters put up with this stuff. And they finally decided that they'd had enough. Next comes the corruption and bribery trial. Political Schadenfreude, don't you just have to smile? This week, Larry Craig lost the latest of his many appeals. But don't ever count Larry Craig out when he digs in his heels. Well, it looks like that governor Blagojevich thought that filling that Senate seat might make him rich. Dropping the F-bomb on call after call, saying any contenders would have to play ball. And the press, we can hardly contain our excitement at another great Patrick Fitzgerald indictment. When they don't run the world like they thought that they could, Political Schadenfreude say, don't it feel good? Really, Blagojevich, Larry Craig, William Jefferson, Vito Facella, all that stuff went down in just the past week. So, yeah, doesn't that cheer you up? This is In the Loop. I'm Jeff Horwich. Quick reminder that our first ever holiday Story Slam is coming up next week, Wednesday night, December 17th in Minneapolis. This is not like any other holiday entertainment you're going to find around here. It's totally unpredictable. I'm sure we can expect stories from sentimental to hilarious to disturbing and everything in between. The Smarts, who you are hearing right now, are working up some new music as we speak. And you're not going to find a better deal. We've kept the ticket price at only 10 bucks, which is enough to cover our expenses if enough people come to see it. So get those tickets reserved at minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop. Hope to see you there. For the show today, we asked our listeners what they do to feel better when the news of the world has them down. Here are two more of those folks who got back to us.
My name is Tim Seiler. I'm actually from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I recently like to turn to a poem by David Berman. It's called The Charm of 5:30. It ends up cheering me up anytime I read it. I really like the beginning of the poem. It starts, "It's too nice a day to read a novel set in England. We're within inches of the perfect distance from the sun. The sky is blueberries and cream, and the wind is as warm as air from a tire. Even the headstones in a graveyard seem to stand up and say, 'Hello, my name is.'" Why it just cheers me up is it just reminds me to just sort of stop and take in anything that I can see, you know, things about nature that you would ignore under other circumstances.
My name is Stephanie Randolph, and I'm from Thousand Oaks, California. I used to love nothing more than to go buy shoes or just bags to make me feel better. But now I feel guilty, like I should be saving my money So now to cheer myself up, I will sit and watch ABC Family's 25 Days of Christmas just for hours at a time. There's this one movie with Mario Lopez called Holiday in Handcuffs. That's the most embarrassing one that I admit to liking. Just makes me happy to watch a cheesy movie that everything is fine at the end of the movie.
Tim Seiler and Stephanie Randolph. Listener Joe LaTorre wrote in late in the game to say when he needs a boost, he goes on YouTube and listens to this song. It's called Chacarone. It's one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. Thanks, Joe. We popped it up on our blog, The Loophole. We're focusing our show today on trying to raise your spirits, and here is something for you. The price of pomegranates is going up. Where is that good news? That's good news in Afghanistan. The U.S. government is trying to make the case to farmers that pomegranates are a much more profitable way to go than opium poppies. And I guess they're making progress. Lauren Stoddard is with me now from Kabul. He is the Alternative Development and Agriculture Director in Afghanistan for USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development. Lauren, thanks very much for talking with me.
Thank you very much for having me.
For a farmer in Afghanistan, what is the advantage right now of getting into pomegranate farming?
Well, pomegranate farming yields more money on a per-acre basis than poppy does, about 15 or 20% more. It's also a product that doesn't go away. They don't have to replant it year after year. With the orchards that are already in place in Afghanistan, we're finding that farmers are able to make a lot more money and basically have a better product to sell.
So you're not starting from zero here. I mean, people have been growing pomegranates in Afghanistan for, I presume, many, many years. Why is that fruit such a good fit for that country?
Actually, Afghanistan may be the genetic origin of pomegranates. Probably have been growing pomegranates in Afghanistan for thousands of years. It's an irrigation-based agriculture based on the snowfall that generates the irrigation water, generally very well suited to tree crops of all sorts.
You're trying to make inroads, for the most part, against opium poppies, far and away the biggest crop in Afghanistan. And I'm sure you run into people who say this project is based on quite a bit of wishful thinking. Do you feel pretty good about your chances? What can you accomplish?
Well, what's interesting is the Afghan farmers themselves are not particularly proud of being heroin farmers, something that they admit to doing only because they want to raise a little cash. Afghanistan has produced so much poppy over the years that the prices of poppy have dropped. So I think what you're finding in general terms is there's an overall push towards finding different crops for Afghan farmers to grow.
When you're trying to talk Afghan farmers into farming fruit, you're going up against the warlords, all these other power brokers who are so wedded to the drug economy, right? How do you deal with that?
The products that we're promoting are not new for Afghanistan. They're traditional in Afghanistan. The Taliban and the others don't actually see these products, frankly, at this point as much of a threat. Whenever we talk about pomegranates, they immediately get very boastful and actually prideful because they know that their pomegranates are the best in the world. It's almost a unifying factor. Everybody likes the pomegranates, whether they're a warlord or a Taliban or a local Afghan farmer.
I presume you are eating your share of Afghan pomegranates. What are they like?
Sweet, red. The ones from Kandahar, which are so famous, are about 2 pounds each.
Wow.
And really delicious. In fact, people that don't particularly like pomegranates, when they come here to the embassy, we get them some, and they all become pomegranate fans. So the product somewhat sells itself.
Now, I never bought pomegranate juice until maybe a year or two ago. It's tasty stuff, supposedly very good for you. But it also is pretty expensive. Are you worried that the world's current taste for pomegranates might be just kind of a passing fad?
Well, there is a possibility of a fad aspect, but the demand is so high from the baby boomers, especially, that are becoming more health conscious, the antioxidants and so forth, that we're finding blended products are on sale around the world. So it's pomegranate plus another juice. And so it actually helps reduce the cost, but still brings in some of the benefits of pomegranates. But that's in the United States or a Western market. In terms of India, though, in the United Arab Emirates, the demand is skyrocketing. They pay 4 times the local price to buy them. So it's something where we haven't even really scratched the surface of what's possible in terms of sales.
I'm talking to you in the context of a whole episode we're doing that where we're trying to kind of uplift people a bit, give them some good news. You feel like the pomegranate story qualifies yet, or is it still just kind of a gleam in your eye?
Pomegranates, up until recently, it was a product that was somewhat unappreciated. We were able to shine a spotlight, essentially, through sheer marketing and promotion and the agricultural fair and other things on this local product. As a result of the promotion and the sales activities, the local prices jump from 50 cents a kilo to $1.50 a kilo. What this has done is created a huge buzz amongst Afghan farmers that, wow, there's a real business to be had in pomegranates. So the choices are not just, do I create an illegal crop or fight with the government, but really there is a product out there that I can feed my family and have a bright future.
Well, Lauren, I'm glad to learn more about it. Thanks very much for making some time for In the Loop.
My pleasure.
That is Lauren Stoddard with USAID in Kabul, Afghanistan. We're getting near the end of the show here, so let's hear from one more listener who talked with us about what cheers her up in these dark, dark days.
My name is Amanda Ladija, and I'm from Chaska, Minnesota. I have 5 cats, Boots, Miss Kitty, Tabby, Mischief, and Hobbs. I think my cats know when I need some cheer because if I'm feeling down or crying, the first thing they're going to do is circle around me like a little pride of lions and then purr until I smile. No matter if you've gained weight in the winter or you're having a bad hair day, they still love you no matter what. You don't always get that from people. So it makes you feel good.
Amanda Ladija has 5 cats who know how to gang up and act as a team. That sounds like a stable situation. Well, we're talking about animals who cheer us up. How can we not mention the Shibas? For the past few months, we've been tuning into a web video stream trained on 6 Shiba Inu puppies in San Francisco. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you really should check out this thing called the internet. They're growing up, but through it all, the crash of Lehman Brothers, the bitter final days of the election, the dismal economic news, those puppies have been there for us.
What take Shiba Inus? Sticks them in a box. Rolling all around and playing tug of war with socks. The puppy cam can.
The puppy cam can.
The puppy cam can, because hey, all you do is click and there are puppies on your screen. What shows up in your email, forwarded to you, distracts you at the office from the work that you should do. The puppy cam can.
The puppy cam can.
The puppy cam can, and when your boss is not around, you can watch it all day. Puppies flop around, wrestling on the ground, delighting everyone who sees them. Don't you wish that you could squeeze them? You can click them, pause, and freeze them. They're just so cute. What can lift your spirits? Put a smile on your face. Forget about the misery that is the human race. The puppy cam can.
The puppy cam can.
The puppy cam can, because hey, all you do is click and there are puppies on your screen. Yawning puppies on your screen. Yipping puppies on your screen. Fuzzy puppies on your screen.
Bridget Murphy ventured into my mad musical workshop to sing that one for us. Thanks, Bridget. In the Loop is produced by Sandon Totten and me and edited by Kate Smith. Our Story Slam this Wednesday. See you there. More details at minnesotapublicradio.org. Or drop by and say hello, friend, on our Facebook page. Come pay us a visit. I'm Jeff Horwich, and I hope you're feeling better.